We'll look for approval of the minutes from the September 25th meeting. Oh, what happened? That's the minutes. Agenda. Now, we will do approval of minutes from the meeting of October 30th.
Right.
So for approval?
Yes. Okay, second that. Now, approval for the agenda for tonight.
Approve.
All right, moving right along. We will now receive a report from the Las Vegas Valley Water District regarding the current well levels, the status of the Blue Diamond water system, and other related concerns.
Good evening. Gabby Villaforte, 1001 South Valley View Boulevard. The water level data collected from both wells indicates a water level decrease of half a foot as compared to the previous month. And then the water system remains stable and all wells are currently operational. Any questions?
Did they finish painting the tanks? Weren't they painting the tanks or something? Did they finish it?
They did. Don't they look beautiful?
I don't know. I haven't been up here during the day to see them.
They look beautiful.
Yes, the tanks have been coated.
Good. Thank you. Thank you on that.
Yeah.
Good.
Okay, now we will receive a report from Metro regarding activity and statistics during the past month and other area crime concerns.
Hey, everybody. Mark Cheptine with Metro. Hope you all had a good holiday season. I know it's been a while. I don't have anything significant to report. Unfortunately, I couldn't pull any statistics. You may or may not have heard, we just went through a reorganization at Metro. They changed all of our boundaries. Our crime mapping systems are crazy. So hopefully next meeting I'll get caught up on that. But the latest and greatest in Metro news, for those of you who live here in the Red Rock area, we just opened our newest area command, the Summerlin Area Command, right off of Far Hills and 215 that went live on Saturday. So that is really the closest physical building for LVMPD to this location if you happen to need it, unless you live down here off Blue Diamond. Enterprise still might, but you have two options now. So that's up and running. And boundary-wise, the only real changes to our boundaries that would affect the Red Rock area, if you live south of State Route 160 now, from essentially the Terribles all the way into town, when you call 911 or 311, you're going to get an officer from Enterprise. So you get a cop in tan, not a cop in green. We'll still be out in the area. That's very much ingrained in our patrol area. So we'll be out there, and you're more than welcome to stop us and see us. But when you do call, your call will be routed to town. So just... So,
well, if you're west of that intersection, is it going to be the Summerlin Area Command or not?
159 and 160, south.
West.
Oh, west of that?
West.
Oh, west, that's all us.
Oh, okay.
That's all us still.
It
no, no it, remains Enterprise, it remains the Enterprise residence section. They just extended the boundaries on the south side of State Route 160 to accommodate for the growth of town. There's a lot of housing tracks over there up to Hualapai.
Yeah.
They generate a lot of calls, and we don't have the manpower for that. So that's all it was.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone have any questions they'd like to ask me? If you have anything that's sensitive or personal you'd like to discuss, of course, I'll be out here after the meeting so you can ask me. Thanks a lot.
Sergeant D,
yes,
a couple
of
weeks ago, two guys, I guess they were from the Enterprise, they were coming down our street and they were in an older, unmarked car. And so they asked a question. They said, is there any crime here? And so I saw both guys, and they had vests on, and I'm thinking like, well, I don't know these guys from Adam. And I go, why are you thinking about committing some crimes? And then finally they showed the badge, and they go that they were going to be coming up soon. He said, right now we're in plain clothes, but he said we'll be in uniform soon.
Yeah,
so.
Our AC, what I call our Air Command Intelligence officers, were out doing. Because our boundaries, the boundaries of Enterprise Area Command changed. It used to incorporate a lot of the southwest portion south of Flamingo. That's all part of Summerlin now. So Enterprise Area Command's borders are everything south of Warm Springs, all the way from here to Henderson. So they've taken over a big chunk of territory that used to belong to our South Central Area Command. So everybody's kind of in flux. There's new areas to new supervisors, so everyone's kind of learning where the hot spots and stuff are. So they were just out kind of like,
yeah,
that's new territory to them. So they're just out kind of scoping up.
Which is good. They're
right.
Getting the lay of the land.
But like I said,
so cool.
And for those of you who live over there, any crime concerns, you're more than welcome to bring them to me. If we can address them, we'll still address them. Or if not, we can always be a liaison with the Enterprise Area Command, because we work very closely with them, because we fall under the umbrella of Enterprise. So we're always happy to help however we can. All right, thanks everybody.
Thanks again.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you. Now, I don't believe there's anyone from the Red Rock Bike Trail.
I mean, I can get a little update
sure,
on it.
Yes, please.
So,
do.
The bike trail, over the holidays, there was, I think it's up to like a $14 million project at this point, and there was a shortfall of about $1.4 million, and the FLAP grant group stepped up and put up the difference, and so it's fully funded now, and we're moving ahead. So, super exciting, yeah.
Just so people wonder, how can a bike path cost so much? They're including our DOT added in having a pull-out lane. Well, you can say, what are these things they offer?
Yeah, there's acceleration and deceleration lanes. It's a wide trail. It's involves a bridge, because you know across from you guys' facility, there's a big wash that has to be traversed, and bridges are expensive. It's an expensive trail, but it's just the beginning of a larger trail system that we hope will build off of this one. So it'll be great investment in this beginning to as a jumping off point.
Thank you, Megan. Now we receive a report from Clark County Administrative Service regarding streetlight shields, cameras removal, the status of CP19900600 land use plan request, updates from Clark County Department of Air Quality, and any other updates from Clark County. For discussion only.
Okay, so I'll start with air quality. So this is very interesting. So we've been talking the past few months about notice of violation for gypsum resources. And at our last meeting that I was here, they were going to, I told you they had gone to hearing officer meeting, and that our staff had been told that they were not going to contest the allegations, and then they showed up to meeting and contested them. So they had to hold it over till November. So there were three notices of violation, one allowing fugitive dust emissions from the unpaved haul road. One was for operating the vibrating grizzly feeder, which sounds a little crazy, but and had damaged ductwork, and then another one was for allowing fugitive dust emissions from the unpaved haul road, another one. So, and then several other things. So they were found, I don't know if they call it guilty, but they were assessed $81,000 in penalties for those three.
Wow.
Three items. So they said they have received one more complaint on September 19th, but it was when they came out, it was not substantiated, and they haven't had any other since. So hopefully $81,000 would teach me quite a lesson, but I don't know. So we'll keep an eye on that. I will ask for updates before the meetings to see if anything new has happened.
How long do they have to pay that?
I have no idea.
Because I heard that it was mentioned by Justin that they might get shut down if they didn't pay the fees.
Oh, I don't know. I have no idea how that process works.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And then we talked about in meetings before how do we call in a complaint. Everywhere that I post agendas, I posted one of these, a bigger copy. I think it was a bigger one. And it says what the air quality index is and stuff, and how, at the bottom, how do I file a complaint about dust or odor? And basically, you can get them multiple ways, phone, email, and then there's one for smoking vehicles, which I did not know about, which is kind of interesting. So anyway, these are posted. Here's copies if someone wants them after the meeting. And then, like I said, I posted them with every place that I post agendas, I put one up that I could, that I include, okay? So that's all on air quality. Land use plan, at our last meeting we had the people here requesting for three changes west of Wallapai for increased density in the land use plan, and they were all denied at the Board of County Commissioner meeting 12/18. They were unanimously denied.
Yeah, so. They didn't even show up either at the Planning Commission or at the County Commission.
They may not have spoken. I saw them
they
at
were
one
just
of
sitting
them.
There. I was.
So, yeah. The Tamarisk, we've been trying to get State of Nevada, Nevada Division of Forestry to come out and help us with our tamarisk removal. Tamarisk, in case you didn't know, is a noxious weed, and it uses a lot of water. So for a couple reasons, we would like it eliminated. I've been working with State of Nevada, and the grant funds that they were hoping to get were used in Pahrump. And so we're still on the list, but we didn't get the grant funds this go around. So we're still on the list. Hopefully they'll get to us eventually. There is another option to reach out to a guy that does noxious weed education in the state of Nevada. And that's on my list to reach out to him and see what other options there are to do that. So hopefully we'll get something done on that pretty soon. It's been going on for a long time, so hopefully we'll get something soon. Streetlight shields on our new streetlights. I had talked to our public works guys, and they had come out and responded to, I think there were three or four where people called in with complaints about the light shining. I have not received any more complaints, so hopefully the shields are working. Have you guys gotten any feedback on that? I think no news is good news on this one. Anybody that lives here in town? Any?
Yeah.
Yeah. Are they?
The one behind my house is horrible. I've had to put blackout curtains on that one.
Did they put a shield on it?
No.
Oh, okay.
I don't think they put a shield on the one by my house either.
Okay.
And that was one that a lot of people were complaining about.
Okay.
Binder in Montana.
Okay. And then it and would be.
The one behind you is Binder in Montana?
Yeah. And then okay. The one by Pauline's, that's all wood.
So it would be Minder, Binder, and Matarongo.
Okay. All right. They had specific addresses on the ones that they had on their list of people that had called in. So, and Matarongo. All right, I'll follow up again with him. I talked to him before the holidays, and they were supposed to be coming out, so okay. I'll have to check up on that. And it seems like I had one other thing.
Megan?
Yes?
There's one light that's out on Cerrito that they've never replaced.
Do you know approximately where?
It's like I want to say 11, okay. Across the street, 11 Cerrito. They fixed the one at the top of the street, but they didn't kind of move it.
All right.
Thank you.
Those are hard because when they come out, it's daytime. So I'll let them know. All right, I think that is all for me. Seems like I have something else, but I guess that's it. I'm also the next item, so I'll just keep talking if you don't mind. You have something for me?
I got a bunch for you.
Oh, okay.
We've been off for a while. Do you know anything about the amending the Regional Flood Control District Master Plan by adopting the Master Plan update for outlying areas, including Blue Diamond?
No, I know
it was in the newspaper.
Okay.
I don't know if it's anything.
Sorry.
Okay.
Anything that concerning or what? But I just happened to see it in the newspaper, and I saw Blue Diamond.
I will ask, and if there's anything that affects. This area, I'll ask if we can get a presentation or something.
Yeah. And then the other thing, a couple other things. Do you know anything about what's going on with the school, the Blue Diamond School, like in the back now? There's a canopy over an area.
School district is a completely separate entity.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. I wasn't sure if they ripped out grass or what. Okay. And then look what I have.
Oh, cool, thanks.
Back to you.
Thank you.
Your keys. And the posting board, as soon as I couldn't get the key made, nobody would make that key for that posting board. Mm-hmm. That posting board, the one lock is kind of almost shot. Is there a way to give that board some tender, loving care? Because there's a couple people have lost a dog, and they put their stuff up there with tape that does not come off all that
okay.
good. So if you know, do something that can be done. And also, can we don't worry about that one. The traffic at the BLM loop entrance. I've heard a couple things on that sometimes they put up cones and it's tough to get through there. The traffic congestion. So is there anything that can bring NDOT in or anything like that?
They are fully aware of it.
Okay, so they'll be looking into that.
It's just like all of our public lands, they're getting loved to death, and people are suddenly discovering public lands. It's the same at Mount Charleston, same here.
Yeah.
I don't know what the solution is, because letting everyone that wants to go in is not good, because then it creates, you know, hazardous situation within the loop. Not letting them in, then it creates backup.
Yeah.
I don't know what the solution is. They're working on it. They're very aware of it.
But, okay, so it's a work in progress.
Yeah. Yeah, and Calico Basin is very concerned about it, and they talked to BLM about it. So.
Okay, good. Yeah. And then can the park water numbers that were given out last time kind of showed October?
That was my other update, but go ahead.
Yeah, October, November, December of 2018, then it went to 2019 and ended right around September. Can we maybe fill out 2019
okay.
so we have the whole year, and then maybe in June or July, actually, revisit it like every 6 months just okay. to see if we're staying exactly the same, okay. just out of curiosity?
That was my other update was, so when Ron Carrington and his guy came out and gave a big talk about the park water, it was understood that there was 1 meter that ran the park. Well, in the reporting comes up there's 2 meters. They have no
right.
idea
right.
where the second meter is, what it runs. So they're bringing in a consultant to trace all the lines and figure out what's going on, because it's a huge discrepancy, and if we're paying an extra bill, the water's going somewhere else, we need to know, because that would mean we're all paying that extra bill through our tax dollars. So we need to so they're working on that, they're bringing in somebody but yeah, they've looked up and down, they work with Chauncey, and it's the mystery that this extra meter showed up. So yeah, weird. And it's like 1 million gallons. I mean, it's
what?
Derek Jackson. Oh. Las Vegas Valley Water District. So we actually came out and met with Clark County. When was that? Back in November, I think it was. We determined that both meters seemed to be feeding the same thing. So we went ahead and just shut off one of the meters and locked it out and took it out of our system. So
oh, really? Oh, okay.
1 meter, and I actually supply the county with updated numbers every month. They ask me for updated numbers.
Okay.
Send those to them. So it'll be a lot easier to track now.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. That is very interesting. And the one taking the 1 meter out of service didn't seem to affect anything?
Not at all. Yeah, we opened and closed both meters several times while water was flowing into the park. And
how weird.
No difference. Yeah.
So I think Ron's email to me was pretty recently, so he must still have someone coming out to work on it. I don't know. So I had 900 emails when I got back after being out, so it's a little hard to keep track of when they came in. So I think it was relatively recently.
And just last thing, this isn't for you. We have three rainfall total meters: Blue Diamond North, South, and then Red Rock. And the South was 9.32 inches for last year. The North was 9.56, and the Red Rock is 12.24, which is way above normal, so that's why the numbers for that we got with 11 feet, 12 feet, that's why they should hopefully stay that way for a while, as long as we continue to get a little bit of rain. So it was a good year for rain up in the mountains. So.
I had hail at my house this morning.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Hail at your
yes,
house?
Yes, I walked out and said, what is going on? And it was little tiny hail pieces. Strange.
Oh,
no. So, yeah, weather's doing weird stuff. Okay, so anything else for me? All right, so the next item, I'll just jump ahead since
yes.
it's me.
Yes.
Oh, no, it's not. I'm sorry. I was going to do, nope, never mind. I'm later. It's calendar.
Okay.
That's not till later.
All right, so our next item is the Desert Sports and Rifle Club, a use permit, 8th application for review of a sound study in conjunction with a private recreational facility, including the shooting range with picnic areas and clubhouse on 480 acres. In an RU zone in the Red Rock Design Overlay District, generally located on the south side of State Highway 159, 1,060 feet west of Sky Vista Drive, within Red Rock and unincorporated Clark County, for possible action.
Great.
Good evening to the council, and good evening to all of you who are attending. My name is Arlen Levitan. I'm Vice President of Desert Sportsman Rifle and Pistol Club. I've been a resident of the Vistas and a member of the club for the last 17 years. Just a little quick background on the club. The club has been at its present site since 1959. At the time, we had 200 members. We currently have 3,500 members. And the club has expanded the number of ranges over time to accommodate that use. Now, we used to get a use permit renewed every few years, and in 2013, the club was granted a permanent use permit in exchange for doing several things. We severely limited the hours of operation when there was no one across the street. Literally, the club was open for shooting to its members at any time of day. Now we're pretty much open sun up to sun down. And we've also put restrictions on the calibers that are shot on the range. Now, when we were granted the permanent use permit, we agreed to do a sound study every 10 years. The last one was in 2009. That sound study took sound readings at four locations, two at the club, one on Charleston, and one in an area across Charleston, which at the time was completely vacant pads as the housing market had slowed down and the area was not developed. When we were granted the permanent use permit, we were asked that the next study be more comprehensive. And we took that obligation quite seriously. The sound study, which we completed in 2019 and was given to the Clark County Planning Commission as required in December, included measurements at 10 different locations across, including eight locations across the street in the residential areas. We also took measurements at periods of high range utilization rather than low range utilization. Now, we engaged Walsh Associates, a certified industrial hygienist, and also a forensic sound engineer. Dale Walsh is here from Walsh Associates. He'll be able to give you the results of the study, share those with you. And we also have John Ovnik, who is our forensic sound engineer. He took the actual measurements. Now, the club has taken some further voluntary actions to further restrict the amount of sound. We have eliminated one particular caliber that the county planning commission wanted restricted to just one range. We've completely eliminated use of that at the range, and that's a caliber, if you're technically oriented, called 50 BMG. That really didn't affect very many members, probably three or four. And we thought that was a reasonable accommodation. We also eliminated all night shooting, including exercises for law enforcement, which we used to allow. We have over 42 government agencies and metro departments that use the range for qualification and advanced training. We do not charge them for that. The club is a 501c7 nonprofit. We are not open to the general public. We don't cater to tourists. We don't sell anything at the range. We've also started installing some additional sound insulation we've done it on three of the ranges so far, and we're going to continue to do that because we are a shooting range, okay? You are going to be able to hear gunfire, but the question is, what is the amplitude of the sound that you hear? Is it below the county requirements? And we're also further cutting back on times of operation. And so, for example, right now we cease fire at 4:45 p.m. And we are committed to being a good neighbor to the folks across the street. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Walsh, who can share the summary of the results of the sound study.
Hopefully my voice will hold up. I guess we're kindred spirits with the crud. Mm-hmm. Again, my name is Dale Walsh. I'm a certified industrial hygienist and a variety of other credentials. That's why my company is called Walsh Certified Consultants. I've been in town for about 28 years. My clients include the county. I've been working with county for over 20 years doing a variety of things, including some noise exposure, and I work with all kinds of other government agencies and private and just about anybody you can think of that might be exposed to something that might be hazardous to their health. But we conducted this study in November, and basically one of the conclusions we found was the study that had been done 10 years previously. The conclusions were basically the same, which the study that was done 10 years ago stated in their conclusions the gunfire at the Desert Sportsman Rifle and Gun Club does not violate any ordinance or law. There are many other sound levels currently that add to the existing potability of the area. The Desert Sportsman's Rifle and Gun Club does not emit sound levels that are intrusive to the already existing neighborhoods and will not emit any sound levels that would be intrusive for the new proposed development. Now that was 10 years ago by another company that did a sound study. John, who if you have any other technical questions, can answer some additional questions. He has some very sophisticated equipment, and we did the sound measurements at 10 locations. Two of them didn't seem, they were really far out and they weren't all that valuable, so we didn't really summarize a lot of that. But we also did sound levels right at the facility. And the summary in the report that we provided, so the nine locations shown on the map were sampled. We used the type of instrument that was required per the Clark County sound or noise ordinance. I have done other jobs for Southwest Gas and some other organizations regarding whether they're complying with the ordinance or not. Frankly, that ordinance is extremely conservative. The city of Las Vegas and other cities, they don't have an ordinance that has numbers in it. Basically, they just list a bunch of noises that you can't really generate. And actually, Las Vegas itself, since this is kind of in between Clark County and Las Vegas, with depending on where you're at, Las Vegas itself just lists a bunch of noises, and it doesn't include gunfire in there as one of the noises that is regulated by them. But we use a type 1 sound level meter with an octave band analyzer, which splits the noise into various different frequencies, everything from the very low boom boom frequencies up to very high frequencies. And again, all that was done in accordance with the Clark County noise ordinance. I summarized all the data that was generated on an average so it could be compared to the allowable levels at each of the different, they're called an octave band, which kind of includes a variety of sound levels with a center frequency associated with it. And we compared those with what we were finding at Charleston itself. Actually, Charleston Boulevard was by far much noisier and much more of a generator of noise than the range was. So we said the exceedances of the Clark County Noise Ordinance, which are highlighted, in the report here were mostly all Mount Charleston Boulevard. And the ones that were beyond Mount Charleston Boulevard were in the 2,000 hertz range. If you just go on and ask whatever your information source is on your phone to play you 2,000 hertz, it'll be a fairly high kind of a noise level, which is fairly common, and would be associated with like traffic and stuff like that. So we also did impulse noise sounds in addition to the averages, and measured at the same location and generated a table of what those noises were. None of those exceeded the Clark County ordinance. So all of those sound levels, which would be possibly more associated with the gunfire, were not exceeded, even at Charleston. And actually, Charleston's impulse noises were the highest. So the bottom line, in summary, the range did not create sound levels exceeding either the Clark County or Las Vegas noise ordinance and background noise. They didn't exceed the traffic noise, basically. And again, that was similar to the findings that we had. There's a whole bunch of data in here that was generated. You know, in addition to, we did comparisons, you know, same time, okay, when a gunfire happened at the range, what was the delay? Because a little bit of delay between, because it takes sound a little bit of time to travel. And what was the sound level when the gunfire happened and so forth. And there's even recordings. So if you're really, really interested in getting into the depths of all this information, you can even listen to the comparison of when a shot happened and what it sounded like in a community. So that's about it. I mean, there's quite a bit more we could go into, but that kind of is an overall summary of the sound study.
How many days was that conducted?
It was conducted over, was it two or three?
Pardon?
It was the busiest times over about 3 weeks.
Three weeks. Every day consecutively?
No, not consecutively. No, only when it's busy.
Why not consecutively?
Because it would be a waste of time.
But they're just instruments.
Sometimes no one's there.
They're very expensive instruments that can't be left by themselves.
I have the attendance records of when we did it.
Well, okay. Just to give you an idea, on 11/17 of 2019, we took measurements from 8 a.m. to 12 p.m., which is the peak period. There were over 185 shooters on the range during that period. Then on 11/22, 115 shooters, which included over two dozen law enforcement officers from 7 a.m. to 12 p.m. On 11/23, 117 shooters during a tactical precision rifle range match. That went from 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. 11/24, 225 shooters shooting a steel challenge match on range 2 at 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. On 11/25, I'm almost done. 103 shooters, including the U.S. Marshals, about a dozen shooters on range 10, 15 Las Vegas constables on range 10 at the same time. On 11/26, 99 shooters, including two dozen Clark County School District police on range 10 and Metro. We allow Metro and all these agencies to use the range so that they can be in the community more rather than travel all the way out to Nellis and use a range out there. Mm-hmm. That way, they're on our streets more often. And again, this was so essentially 6 peak days, whereas the last sound study was done on 2 days. and we were asked to be more comprehensive. We took that obligation seriously. And if you want a copy of the complete report, I believe it will be available as supporting material on the agenda for the Clark County Planning Commission meeting, which is on the 5th of February. That should be on their
BCC. Was this submitted to planning?
Yes.
Okay, so then it's online. It'd be available online.
It should be online.
Yeah, all that information is in results, including the calibers of different kinds of guns that were used.
I have a couple more questions, observations. I happen to live in the Shadow Point community, which is across the street. Okay, now, my hearing is not very good, and like most of the conversation up there, beginning of the meeting, I didn't hear a word. Now, when I'm laying in bed, 6 o'clock in the morning in the summer, 7 o'clock in the morning in the wintertime, there are some very noisy, high caliber, I don't know whether it's handguns or rifles, but it's like someone is beating a broomstick on a large box right outside my bedroom window. So that is much higher than the traffic noise on Charleston. Much higher. And they will start like it right at 6 o'clock, and they'll be there all day long. Now the small caliber is really not that much of an issue. It's just like a little pop, pop, pop.
Yeah, but you don't, but calibers don't affect the sound.
Well, whatever, I don't know what it is.
Right, you know? You don't.
I mean, last time I fired a gun was when I was in the Army.
Well, and remember, too, when you're talking about calibers that have a low frequency.
Well, forget the caliber, but whatever the weapon is creating that much of a noise. So my question is, how can you say the noise level's less, not more than the traffic on Charleston?
It's measurable.
Because that's not the case.
Well, it's emotional.
Well, but
there's a difference between measurable and emotional.
Well,
you're gone, your traffic is different.
Yeah, I mean,
sorry, what was that?
So you hear a gun, but your traffic gets different. It'd be the same decibel level.
Yeah,
I know, but the traffic doesn't pound.
It doesn't pop. It just drives.
Right, I know, but the point
up,
is,
it rises down. This is like impulse noise.
But the point is, so that happens.
Are you saying you can hear the gunfire in your home?
Can I ask that everyone announces who they are and their address for the record?
Arlen Levitan, Desert Sportsman.
Okay. Charles Mihalik, I live in Shadow Point. Right, actually, right across. I mean, because I'm.
And for the record, if you can just state your address. Yes.
1237 East Sky Racer Drive.
Thank you.
So, anyway.
You can hear the gunfire in your home?
It's like someone's. Yeah, I'm laying in my bed. I don't hear the. Maybe it's the thud, the thud sound that comes from it.
There's a lot of construction over there, too.
No, nothing new construction.
Well,
The
issue with the kind of noise, and this is where the octave bands come into play, is that the low frequency types of noises, the thuds you're talking about, those have much higher allowable levels because they impact hearing much less. When I do occupational noise exposures, when it's all low frequency type of noise, the allowable level, it's also called A weighting, where they actually eliminate the low frequency noises in an occupational setting because those low frequency noises do not cause hearing damage like the higher frequencies do. So, and the other issue that happens with low frequency noise is it's a much different means of stopping it. Low frequency noises, like I did a study over at the one of the towers, I forget what they're called, right across from the swimming pool at the MGM, where they have the day club and the boom boom all the time. I mean, the walls that are normal built walls and glass and so forth, this low frequency noise goes right through them. So that would also be applicable to any trucks that are using their air brakes on it. You would be able to hear those because they are low frequency. They would tend to go through the normal building types of materials that are typically used. So, you know, if anytime somebody's using an air brake, you probably hear that rumble as well. Yeah, I mean, and the thing that we're saying, we're not saying there's no, you can't hear it, you know, especially if you're outside your home.
And if it does wake me up at 6 o'clock,
you know, we're talking about inside the home, we're not talking about the outside.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, being inside the home, being the low frequency aspect, which again is not going to harm hearing, and you know, as far as you know, that's beyond my study, is, you know, with regards to, you know, annoyance versus whether it's harmful or not. Yeah. So it definitely, you know, it can be an annoyance, but then again, you know, so, people that live up near Nellis, boy, I feel sorry for them purchasing up there.
Now,
if they don't like jets going overhead all the time.
Now, when that's happening, if I walk outside in the morning, get my paper, you can hear all the echoing in that whole community up there. And it's only certain weapons. I don't know what ones they are.
It's all of them, but whatever. That's not the point. The point is it's within limitations of the Clark County stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
we're not beyond the limitations. The airport's way worse, you know.
Yeah, it depends. There's noise sources everywhere. And, you know, and it's a matter of, like I said, when I was doing the study just on Durango off of Blue Diamond, and they were talking about putting a community right next to one of the gas stations where they basically take the gas line and bring it down to a smaller pipe.
Mm-hmm.
That screams, and that's high frequency.
Yeah.
And, you know, the issue was a matter of, okay, well, what are we going to have to do with this if somebody builds homes right here? And frankly, when I did that noise, most of the noise, because if you've been in Durango in the morning off of Blue Diamond, that sucker is really busy and a lot of truck traffic. So there's the noise from that, and even the airplanes, that because the flight path kind of goes over there too. Those were contributing to the noise. So, you know, we live in a noisy environment. You know, these, the low frequency type of stuff, yeah, I mean, it's going to go through, and that's why one of the limitations is the times that they're open. They're not. And that's another thing that is in the regulation too. They actually have, they break it into four different categories. First of all, they break it into residential and industrial, mm-hmm. as far as the Clark County noise ordinance. Of course, industrial areas, the noise that's allowed is quite a bit higher. And then they break it into day and night. And night is defined typically as 10 p.m. to 7 a.m. And the allowable levels are much lower for nighttime noise levels. And so the, and since the range doesn't operate, you guys, you're not opening at 6 anymore, are you?
In the summer.
In the summer?
6 o'clock.
Okay, I mean, you know, you know, I'd leave that up to the range and, you know, anybody who's discussing it as far as the times of operation. But 7 to 10 is, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. is considered the daytime.
So were there any studies done that were looking at the nighttime noise level for that 6 a.m. period? Was any of the sound studies looking at that period?
I don't think you guys are open the night.
No, they weren't even open.
We did this in
November.
So
and they weren't even open at 6 a.m. at that time.
It was the summer.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, in order to do that, it'd have to be done in the summertime.
Yeah.
You know, and that's basically for, you know, you get more light in the summer.
But a gun being shot at 10 a.m., would it be the same reading as at 6 a.m.?
Well, the readings are all dependent on a variety of things, because even inversion layers and you know, there's a lot of environmental factors that can impact. Is it windy out? Sometimes the wind, I mean, that's one of the things we have problems with our noise meters. When it's windy out, the wind can overpower everything and make it so noisy on the microphone that's used. So there's a lot of environmental factors that have to be put into play, and you know, and those things have to be monitored as well. So there's, you know, and there's a whole bunch of like I said, a whole bunch of data. There's all kinds of graphs in here that compare what the noise was when the gun was fired as opposed to what the sound was. The main conclusion with this is that the noise study showed no violation of the very conservative Clark County noise ordinance. And there really is no numbers you can use for Las Vegas. And Las Vegas doesn't even mention guns as far as noises that are prohibited or need to be addressed.
I didn't hear your response. So did you or did you not measure the sound from 6 a.m. to 7 a.m.?
No, because they weren't open between 6
and
7. But
they are open at those hours in the summer.
But we did this in November.
But you say that they were tested between 7 and 12 in the daytime.
Yep.
Yeah.
That was the only time that were tested.
If you'd,
just those few hours.
Well, we were looking to maximize it.
Hours.
Yeah, we did it during peak hours, and all that's described in the results with everything that Arlen went through. So we were really focusing on, because you can't leave these instruments out. People will steal them. I mean, you just can't stick an instrument out and just let it sit there for days on end, because you won't come back and it won't be there anymore. But based on the timing of when the range, and we knew, working with the range, we knew when they were going to be the busiest. And we focused on weekends, when there's going to have a lot of shooters present. And even tournaments and so forth, where we knew the noise would be at its maximum. And we evaluated that. And as far as any ordinances are concerned, we didn't exceed any of those ordinances. And as I said, and this is actually the first study I've done where the ordinances weren't exceeded. When I've done it for Southwest Gas, I've done it for a hotel who had a neighbor who like to have parties at night until 3 a.m. and they were extended stay hotel. They didn't, I've done it in a variety of locations. Even in the middle of nowhere, the northwest part of town, just the planes going over and everything, you could get background levels that would exceed this ordinance. So this is a very, very stringent ordinance.
I would say also, I work the morning shift, okay, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And at most, in the early hours, probably got two, maybe three shooters on the entire range.
Right. I'm aware of that. And it's usually the guys with it's the one that creates the thudding sound. So I don't know, which weapon that is.
Just as a neighbor, since you have so few people coming at 6, would you ever just be open to voluntarily moving your start time to 7? Since you only have maybe 2 or 3?
I could bring that to the board. And the problem is, of course, in the summer,
What summer are you guys at the range? Is it May to August? What do you
but
guys
still
classify
you're
as summer?
Saying there's maybe two people, so even though it's hot, there's not like there's throngs of people taking
it's
advantage
until
of the
Labor
time.
I think it's summer is Memorial Day to Labor Day.
Okay.
Yeah, summer hours are May 29th to September 3rd.
Okay.
Is some round, but it's not the number of shooters, it's whatever they're shooting. So may I ask a question with respect to your comment on adding soundproofing? What do you have scheduled? Can you describe what that is?
What we do is, since the canopies of shared ranges, which is those would be where high calibers are shot, would be covered ranges with multiple shooting positions. What we've been putting in is most of those covered areas have a hard surface underneath.
Yeah.
And we've been spraying a sound insulating foam.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the range that would be most likely to have a high caliber rifle that, and again, anything can thud, but that's already been treated. The additional ranges that we'll be treating would be range 6. That's popular in the morning.
Is that the one that's farthest out, 159?
No.
That's the one that I see most activity at, like, 6 in the morning.
No, that tends to be law enforcement doing training at that hour.
Yeah.
They get in before their regular shift starts, and they do their quals, and get back on the street.
But that section.
I'm certainly open to bringing it to the board to further restrict time. I can't promise anything, but we have a board meeting in 3 weeks. I'll bring it up, and if you'll leave your contact info with me, I'll be happy to work with you on trying to figure out what's going on. You may have a situation where, just due to the configuration of hard surfaces, and that would include stucco walls, which we all have in our backyards, you might have some weird reflections going on at your particular location. We'll be happy to work with you on that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Arlen.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm sorry. I'm a realtor representing my client. He lives at Caledonia.
Can you get your name and address?
Sorry, my name is Bertha Velasquez. I'm a realtor, and I'm representing my client. He lives at 12349 Valley Chase, which is Caledonia, right across the street.
Yep.
Could you go into details about what expansion is planned?
There's no further expansion other than there's one range being open, which we call 9A, and that's a completely tunneled range. There should be almost no sound emanating from that, in that there are very high berms, not just in the front part, but all the way down. And if you'd like to look at it on Google Maps, I can show you where that is. But other than that, there is the way we've been adding more capacity is taking some of our wider ranges on 2 and 10, which are the bays on the left and right of the facility, and subdividing those into smaller bays. So there are no immediate plans to add any new ranges beyond 9A, just additional what we call shooting positions on existing ranges.
Could you please answer a question for me? I'm a little confused on this one. Within here, that your justification, it says that the nearest residential development is located approximately 3/4 of a mile to the east and separated from the use by a mountain range. But yet, the gentleman and this young lady said they have, you're representing a person with property across the street. Is across the street 3/4 of a mile? Or that's what's kind of confusing me.
From range center, yes.
It is 3/4 of a mile. Yeah, because when I hear across the street, I'm thinking across the street.
Yeah, our driveway is a half mile.
Okay.
Then we own the land just south of Charleston where the water is channeled through for the retention basin.
Okay.
And so we've gotten lots of offers from commercial developers who want to build noise generating businesses there, and we are committed to not selling anything. We're a social club. We're not around to make money. In fact, we prohibit any kind of commercial operations, and we don't even have, like they just had the SHOT Show in town. Both the Clark County shooting complex and the Boulder City range and Pro Gun Club had huge events with literally almost 1,000 shooters on their range at one time, and that's loud. When there was nothing across the street, there were times when we would have events like that. We're not ever going to do an event like that again because we don't want to generate that much noise.
I think you had one this past summer or sometime, right? It was law enforcement, I think. They had machine guns.
Definitely law enforcement.
NFA registered firearms, including full autos, are allowed on the range, but we're very strict about that. No bump fires, nothing, and we have range safety officers patrolling the range at all times, and if we see anything hinky going on, we put a stop to it quick. We throw them out or call Metro.
There's the
we actually don't have much problems with our members.
That's the closest one. Okay.
So, is there any more public comments on this? Anybody that wants to? So, I think we spent a lot of time on this tonight. So, the only thing that I would say to both parties, as the town grows, your problems are going to grow.
Oh, yeah, they're.
Okay, hold on. But I also heard the word that it was built in 1959.
Yes.
It was there before you guys were there. Okay? Get along. Do your homework. You may have to adjust your hours. You may have to adjust something what you do, but work together. I don't want to see the shooting range go anywhere. I don't think it should go anywhere, but you will be surrounded by homes before long. Just be ready to adjust.
We are.
So that's the only thing I would say.
Neighbors.
Yeah, there's no Megan, I don't think we have any complaints. We don't have anything, right?
Nope.
You're under the county policy.
Staff is recommending that no further sound studies be required.
How much of that 3/4 mile is privately owned?
The 3/4 is to get to Charleston, right?
To get to Charleston. How much of that? Like, in other words, kind of coming what Gary said, I had it written here. Is like, can more growth come out that way?
Not that way.
No. Okay.
The area that's being developed now, and if you want to talk about loud sounds.
No, I understand, but no. It's and maybe the certain calibers can be only shot between 10 and 2 or something to alleviate the loud. I understand what you guys are saying. There's going to be sound. Like, and I understand what that gentleman's saying, but yeah. I feel like we have kind of
beat it dead.
Yeah, you know, yeah. We've kind of been on this long time tonight. That's, you know.
Thanks for your willingness to work with the neighbors, and I do appreciate the need for it. We certainly need a place for people to go to shoot instead of being out in the woods. So I appreciate the service that you're offering to Metro, and I appreciate your willingness to work with your neighbors.
I do have a question on the way this is worded, and what Megan was saying about the staff recommendation is, this seems like we're use permit 8th application for review of a sound study in conjunction with a private recreational facility.
Mm-hmm.
So are we approving the sound study by itself?
Yes.
Then how can we say no more sound studies?
No, there'll be another one. And we're committed to doing one every 10 years.
Right.
And if there is reason for there to be another one sooner, we're happy to do that.
Right. The staff, planning staff, has recommended, because there are no code enforcement complaints.
Right.
That there's been demonstrated cooperation. They say it all in there. They say staff finds there have not been adverse impacts on the surrounding area, therefore staff therefore can support the request and further recommends future submittal of sound studies and reviews of the sound studies no longer be required. That's what staff has recommended.
Yeah, I know, but to me it seems like that should have been in the application here, the wording for the application. That no more studies.
No, that's the recommendation.
That's
okay.
That's the recommendation.
That's the whole recommendation.
They didn't. Are we to vote on this?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. We can do it now.
I'd like to make a move to approve the sound study.
Approved.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, we're moving on to the next item.
Bob. What's that?
Are you going to vote on it?
Approved, yeah. Okay. I did say approved.
Sorry.
My head was down. I'm sorry. I was
going on to our next item with this Rexius Rick and Rochelle, a zone change, the first extension of time to reclassify 22.9 acres from RU zone to H2 and RE zone in the Red Rock overlay. There's a waiver of development standards which are allowing overlay cul-de-sacs, full off-site improvements. Excuse me, please. If you want to speak about that item, please go outside.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you. We'll give you a minute to vacate.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Full off-site improvements are asked for waiver of that, which is paving, curb, gutter, sidewalk, and street lights. The design review is for the following: a proposed single-family residential development on 22.9 acres, residential boarding stables, 3 preliminary grading plan in conjunction with the hillside development, slopes greater than 12% for a proposed single-family residential development within a hillside and foothills transition boundary area, and 4 increased finished grade, generally located at the south side of Blue Diamond Road and the east and west sides of Coat Road within Red Rock. For possible action, I'm sure there's someone here to represent.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Chris Armstrong representing Rick and Rochelle Rexius, 8521 Coat. This is the first extension of time on the application that we submitted and got approved by this town board and also by the county commissioner back in December of 2016. I'm sure most of you have recognized a lot of familiar faces. Rick and Rochelle have completed construction of their home. Last year we came through with a subsequent application on the boarding stable due to some modifications on the county's interpretation of the use and also for the boarding stable itself. So we're continuing to move forward with construction and development of the property. Staff has recommended 2 years. We'd like more than 2 years, but we agree with staff's conditions and respectfully request your approval this evening.
Where's the water going to be coming from?
So there's water actually that's coming up. The water district is developing another tank that's proposed. I think they're doing design work right now, and I think they're doing
it's
going to
be built next year.
Next year. So I think we may fall in the subsequent water pressure zone. So it may be the next tank after that, but that's anticipated where the water supply would be.
So I think this is appropriate for the area, and I like the plan. But my concern was that I heard that you were going to be tapping into the co-op line for the water.
I think Rick and Rochelle have a well, right? But So right now our intent is not to do that.
Would you accept that as a condition of our approval for extension? That you don't tap into the water, the co-op line?
At this point, I wouldn't like to take away, like if we develop a couple of the units and maybe we don't do half acre lots, that we do something different that's maybe acre lots, and maybe that's appropriate for tapping into that line. I wouldn't want to take away that that right at this point.
Yeah.
If we come back.
I wouldn't want to support anything that's tapping into that line.
Okay. Well, why don't we, if there's for some reason a change and we're going to do that, I don't know if there's some way to come back to this board or come back to you
Because I think my thing would either be to approve with a condition that you don't tap into the co-op line or deny. That would be our only options.
Okay.
So, I mean, is that a condition that you'd be willing to accept if we did an approval with that condition? And I know that Justin's very sensitive to what's happening with that water line also.
Yeah, and I spoke with Justin yesterday just regarding this. He didn't seem to have any issues, so we didn't talk specifically about
the water. Yeah, he probably wasn't aware of
that,
but we've had quite a lot of conversation with him about the concerns we have for that water line. One is it's really not up to standard. There's holes everywhere. It really needs to be shut down because it's in such disrepair, and it's a horrible, we've talked to the state water engineer, it's a horrible use of water because it's springing all over. There's concerns about health because there's holes in the line, and then there's bacteria getting in, and they really don't have the resources to maintain the water line. And additionally, that water really should belong in this aquifer where it's coming from. It shouldn't be dragged all the way to Arden. So I think there needs to be something that's more forward thinking than pulling off of this old antiquated line. And that's a concern. And it's a concern of Justin's too.
I don't understand how we can tell in this case, a developer who, you know, an applicant who's coming forward, that you can't use a privately owned water line. How can we tell them you can't use that water line? The Blue Diamond Water Co-op. Like asking them not to use it. That doesn't seem fair to me.
Our neighbors are on it. There's several neighbors on the co-op line up there.
But doesn't that co-op only give you so many gallons a day?
Yeah, you get 1,000 gallons a day.
And that would establish what you guys need, or how would you?
On a per unit basis?
That's only, I thought it was per parcel.
We're talking about 29 homes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if we go the RE, right, so if you go the RE, then...
Which is what you're asking for.
Right, right. So we're still up in the air on, you know, obviously the market conditions, you know, I think better than anybody, right, that there's, you know, RE is a potential for that property. We're also seriously considering 1-acre lots as being maybe more appropriate for the area, right? So we'd like to keep our options open, and if it does go to RE, then more than likely what the requirement would be for, you know, we'd need to tap into municipal water, right? So
you're talking about when the design review comes up, at that point, looking at whether you have RE or 1-acre lots or half acre lots, or because we're actually approving right now the potential for RE as mm-hmm. I'm reading it.
So I think previously to this, I think it was zoned RU, right? Which is
right, RU, yes.
And so then turned everything into RE. Right, the entire 22 acres.
So everything is RE.
That was already approved.
If we want to do 1-acre lots, we can do 1-acre lots in the RE zone.
RE,
we
that's
can't
correct.
Do right. 1-acre lots in the RU zone. I believe that's minimum 2-acre lot size. Mm-hmm. So the RE does allow us to do 1-acre lots. So like I said, we're still in discussions right now internally as to what is the most appropriate. And you know, there's a lot of demand for the larger 1-acre lots, and it's, you know, it could be 1-acre lots that they end up getting developed as, but we can't develop under the RU, so
right.
We need the RE extension, right?
Right.
So that's why we're requesting it, and I think if it does go to RE, then we'd be hooking up to municipal. We'd need to wait for municipal water to arrive.
And I guess my concern is that's, and Chris, I know you, and I know
yeah.
you to be a good guy, and I know you guys to be a good neighbor, and you know what our concerns are about the co-op line. I mean, all of the things that I just said. It's not sustainable, they don't have the money. It just doesn't make sense to build a new subdivision around an antiquated system that doesn't have the money to maintain it. It's just, it's not a good planning decision, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it's full of holes, it's springing everywhere, they have health problem concerns, they have state water.
Is there any regulation, you know, I don't know
mm-hmm.
a ton about it, but
yeah,
is there regulations on how it's maintained then?
Yes, and they don't meet the regulations because they sprout up these big holes and they don't have the money to maintain the line.
That's not exactly accurate. Every time, talking to the state water engineer, every time there is a leak, it is fixed, just like the water district does here. When there's a leak, it gets fixed. Every time.
Well, I don't know that that's necessarily true. There was a marsh with cattails
right.
on it.
And as soon as it was brought to their attention, it was fixed.
Well,
to the satisfaction
I mean,
of the state water engineer.
I appreciate what you're saying, but the line itself is not, it's in great amount of disrepair. And if you actually walk to the line and if you unearth everything that's underground and you looked at it, you would find many leaks that aren't identified. Because people aren't walking the line to identify leaks.
Okay.
It's only in those occasions. So my point is just how are we making a sustainable plan on a line that's just antiquated, falling apart, and has all kinds of problems with it. So I'm just saying I don't believe that it makes sense to put 29 houses or
so,
plan for 29 houses
so
on
what,
that line.
What about a condition, and just trying to brainstorm if it's, If they're developed as RE lots, that at that point they wouldn't be tied into, they wouldn't be allowed to be tied into that water, to that water district, right? So if we wait for 29 lots, we'd need to wait. If we're doing that, we'd need to wait for municipal water.
I would like that condition, yes. And then what happens if you go to 1 acre lots, you're not going to drill wells, right? Or are you going to be willing to drill wells? Or?
Possibly, right?
Because on a 1 acre lot, you can fit, you know, a well and a septic easily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, on an acre lot.
On an acre, yeah.
So if the condition is, and I don't know if, you know, I haven't talked to Rick and Rochelle about this, but maybe that's the condition that if we do RE size lots and do the 29 lots, then we agree to a condition that doesn't have, that we wouldn't be tying into the co-op.
Yeah. Well, I also think that sometimes that line, the co-op line, runs good. Sometimes it doesn't run good. If you're selling homes to people,
we're not going to be selling. Yeah.
The people want to open their faucet and have water coming out. So I don't think that the co-op line is even a possibility.
That's what my point is. I just think from a planning standpoint, I just don't think it makes good planning sense.
It only makes sense if you have 29 people and then you have people paying in to, because you would have like a.
Yeah, but
HOA, you'd be collecting money for that line. So what you're saying is true. There's not enough people on that line to maybe support the maintenance of, is what you're saying, right?
Well, I'm saying that, and I also don't believe in the basic mechanics of bringing one well from the spring here all the way over to Arden.
I appreciate what you're saying, and I don't believe in it. But doesn't somebody go up, I mean, isn't it happy regular they go up and check the water quality and
They have to do treatment, yes.
So I know they check all that, and of course, everybody knows that that's on the line, you know. Of course, when we bought the property, we knew that co-op line was there. And we knew it was functioning, and we talked to the neighbors, and the people are using it, and they've got plenty of pressure, plenty of water. So it was part of our deal to know it was there. Not that we're going to use it. We don't know. We couldn't make that decision today. I know I won't. I mean, if it's a line and it works for us, and it's putting out the water, and it's all tested, and the line's in, you know, gets in good shape, which would happen, you know, is a possible deal.
So in these homes that you may or may not build, I mean, it's are you saying you would start an HOA for the water line if you tapped into it?
Well, you're going to have, when you have that many people online, you're going to have to, you got to have water. I mean, you got to have.
No, understandable.
Sure, yeah. And you got to make sure the line's going to work. That'd be crazy. No one's going to buy it.
Because somewhere along the line, somebody's got to maintain this or help support it somewhere along the line. And if it's
the more
HOA,
users you get on it,
yeah. I don't want to see 30 wells above my property. You know, I don't. It kind of defeats the purpose, you know. But at the same time, the water districts here, that reservoir that's going in, is that going to be allowed to be tapped in for anybody in the near future? I mean, what's the purpose of that line?
Down past Wallapai into Mountain Edge.
Right.
So here's what we're specifically asking is, when would they have the opportunity to use municipal water for this subdivision?
Like Chris was saying, they'd have to build another one.
I think they'd have to build another one.
Plus the 72 acres, the RE that was once owned by Gypsum, got sold. And if that developer puts in the next one, then there's the water for
you know, on
project.
The corner, then
So obviously that's not requires another tank.
So knowing that he's laid out that kind of money for that property, he's gonna probably want to start building at some point in time. So
where's this property at that you're talking about?
Ours, it's, I can show you, it's at the corner of Blue Diamond and Coat, essentially.
Oh, okay. I know.
Three story.
It's a new story
right there.
That's what I thought you said.
Right there.
Then you're talking about
right
all
there.
These acres
right.
and mm-hmm. development. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I'd like to go back to the conversation about the condition for.
So if you want to put that condition on, right, and then, you know, we need to talk about that internally. If you want to place that condition on, then that's, you know, it's the board's discretion, right? So.
Mm-hmm.
I'm against the condition. I'll say that right now. So if you guys want to put the condition on,
and when you say you're against, what are you saying? You don't.
I don't want to put the condition on. I think they have a right to get water from wherever.
Let me add something else. Because we knew half acre would come, and we paid into that line, and we were not tapped into it. But is like $15,000. So he's actively selling and selling. So it's a bad deal if we're going to if the line sucks. You're saying it's not any good, or we're going to shut it down. That's a bad, you know. That would have been nice to know.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, obviously, for due diligence for everyone, there should be awareness about, you know, the health concerns, the state water engineer concerns, and just the general dollar amount that, I mean, that line is from before 1939, you know, steel pipe that's sitting in the dirt. I mean, you can only begin to imagine how many holes there are in that line. I mean, when you just walk the line once and you'll see the condition it's in. So you're really talking about really to bring it to, you can't patch, you can't just patch a steel line for miles and miles. You've got to replace it, right? And so that's a huge, huge number to really make it a viable thing.
Right? Yeah, I know they're working on a grant, trying to get a grant to fix the line out of the state, out of Carson City. I mean, they've been working on that. So I know there's things in
there. Well, it's also, it's also,
you know, it's a regulated line, and there's water rights available, right? Like it's.
Mm-hmm. That is right.
So can you purchase water rights out of that line still? Do we know?
Yeah.
They're still selling them.
Yeah. They're still selling them.
Yeah. And he's actively selling, trying, so.
And would you, the water rights you have right now, does that cover your square footage that you would use? Because I know water rights only cover so much.
Well, right? You're not actually buying the water rights.
Well, you actually
a use right.
No, I got the water right part, but it only covers so many acres, so many trees. Every time you add a tree, you got to have more water rights.
You purchase enough for the initial purchase, I believe, and Rick, can you correct me if I'm wrong, but I think was for his particular acres,
right,
which is 5 acres, where his home is located on. He didn't purchase additional acreage for the rest of the subdivision. And to be honest, no additional water rights have been purchased for that other portion of their remaining property.
Use rights.
Yeah.
Well, I would like to make a motion to approve the extension based on the fact that you'll tap into the municipal water system when it's available.
For the RE size lots.
Yeah, for the RE size
lots. I'm not going to agree to the condition. We can accept the condition.
But I'm just, that's the language
you're taking,
you're
saying for the half acre?
Pardon?
For the half acres.
Yeah, for the half acre.
Once it's available.
Once it's available.
So I.
Okay, so your motion is for approval.
With that condition.
Condition to get water from municipal line for half acre lots.
Mm-hmm.
For RE lots, okay.
Well, I'd actually say for all lots. Really, that was mine, for all lots. My motion's for all lots.
So what is the vote?
So you're saying if we can't, sorry, just,
I mean, if we do 1 acre lots, I would say you should still be on municipal water.
So we wouldn't be able to
Or drill a well.
Right.
Oh,
so I think
okay,
that
that's right. So that's true. That is a different condition, correct?
Yeah,
right, and I don't think you can take away their rights to drill a well.
No, I'm not.
Or to tap in.
No, I'm really just working
water,
on
right?
the language right,
right
now.
Right.
I don't know if legal that. So
go
legally,
ahead.
I don't know if that, you know, like Bob says, I don't know if legally you can put the condition on, but I don't know if
it's enforceable.
If legally, it's enforceable or not. Right. It's
what about
if the right is there.
The extension. I mean, if you're saying we need to wait for municipal water for the half acres,
right?
Okay, that could be 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 6 years. We're only got a 2 year back to our
right.
About discussion about
right.
We're going to get a 2 year extension here, right?
Mm-hmm.
How about if the wording were?
Mm-hmm.
How about if the wording were, when municipal water is available?
Mm-hmm.
Then would have to hook up to it at that point in time. So basically what that would mean is if you were on the Blue Diamond Co-op line, that once the municipal water came up, then you'd have to hook in. I don't know if that makes sense or not.
So if for some reason, just talking this through,
right.
If for some reason we, you know, the individual lot owners, whoever those end up being or however we structure the deal, end up purchasing those water rights, right, so they're buying the water.
A use right. They're purchasing
right.
a use right.
Right. So once they purchase those rights, then if municipal service comes along, then obviously they've got the existing right. Then they have to pay the fee, the connection fee, whatever that is, to municipal service as well. You know, if I were them, I'd be like, well, I paid $15,000-$20,000 to, you know, tie into this water right, and now I've got to pay another, I don't know what the connection fee is depending on the meter size.
So that right would be an irrevocable right, correct? That's what we're saying, so they couldn't revoke it.
Correct.
Okay, so then forget what I just said. Then I think you guys should have all options. So I would not.
We don't have a motion yet.
Right.
No, we don't.
Yes. I would like to see things play out to see what happens in the next couple of years with the water as they put the water line in, and then because right now the Blue Diamond water is what 12 feet. So. I don't know. I just don't find the Blue Diamond co-op line. They've never been in violation or anything else. Yes, is it old and everything else? Yes, but I know people that are on it, and I don't know. I just find somebody coming in should have the choice of getting water wherever, you know, if that's one of their avenues, then go for it. You know, I think it's their call. So I don't think we should limit them by taking out the Blue Diamond co-op line.
So when will you guys know if you're going to do 1 acre or half acres? Because I mean that's the big. This is my thoughts. If you do 1 acre lots, tap into the line.
If you have 1 acre lots, what?
Tap into the co-op. If you have less, I think you need to use the water district line. That's double the houses. You're going from 22 homes to 44.
So I think we've got 29.
I'm with Bob and I'm with her. It's like,
so is it?
You know what I'm saying?
I didn't understand that. It really would be 44 at half.
No. I don't know what to find. That's what I'm saying. No, the plans are, and I understand why. But
so what's happening is there's some parcels like Rick and Rochelle have 5 acres. I think they've got 3 acres left, right, approximately.
Yeah.
So they've got 5 acres. So a couple of parcels will be larger. Where that, you know, the riding arena is, obviously that's a larger parcel. So
two houses going on.
So if you look at the amount of the remaining acreage that can be developed at half acre lots equates to 29 lots for the entire acreage. So
that's what I read. Right. They're approved for 29.
Okay. We're approved for 29 lots on total. I think it's like 1.27.
And that's if it's average. RE or you do 1 acre or half acre. That's your design.
It shows a maximum
29.
Of 29 lots. Yeah. And we couldn't get based on
29.
Maximum is 29.
Okay.
So based on, even though the acreage we've got, you know, there's 22 acres or 22.9, whatever that acreage is, the maximum number of lots that we have approved is that 29 lots. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you could, you know, based on the acreage, you could do 45 or whatever it is, but there's no plans to do 45. It's, you know, the riding arena component takes larger portion, and there's a couple of other larger lots there that will remain as larger lots.
Well, but even without municipal water, you still could drill a well.
On 1 acre lots, yeah.
On the 1 acre lots, right. And there's going to be, so there'd be some half acre lots that you wouldn't be able to drill a well on. And that would be the ones where you'd either have to wait for municipal or tying into the co-op.
Yeah, if we're doing half acre, we're waiting for municipal, right?
Right.
So,
I mean, I love hearing that. If you're doing half acre, you're waiting for municipal.
Right. So
how can we memorialize that?
So I think if you're approving those number of lots, right, and if that's our only option, then I think, you know, I think that's the only way that we can service those 29 lots. So I don't even know if there needs to be a condition, right? Because I don't think there's enough water right available, you know, with the co-op for that many lots, you know.
Yeah.
Even if there were.
Yeah, there's 72 acre feet of water available. You know, so that's a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we'd be, you know, we're like, be 20.
Like Bob said, I think it's unfair to take that right with a condition away from us, right? And I understand what you're saying, it's an old line, and I think, you know, if there's money spent, and you know, on that redevelopment of that infrastructure, and for some reason, I don't know how they get any sort of funding, or if the state comes in, or whatever, if it does turn around and you've got a condition on there that doesn't allow you to tap into it, right? I think
we were trying to get the numbers up. It wasn't a money deal as much for us, as that's why we're doing the arena and the barn to support those lots for people that, you know, you can't put a horse on a half acre lot. No. I mean, even if it's horse brought, you know, you can't, you know, you get a bigger house on there and a pool, yeah, maybe, you know what I mean? So acre, you know, is bigger, obviously. And so what we were trying to do is build a facility that could handle either way.
Right.
And so your answer, whether we're going half acre or acre lot, we really haven't made that decision yet, because we were kind of waiting to see what the water is doing. I know they're building a tank across this, you know, that's going to happen. So things are starting to happen. We don't know the time frame for another one, you know. And right. So that's kind of why we're up in the air on it. But look, you're not going to sell people houses, lots, on a co-op line that's terrible. I mean, it's going to be, that'd be a hard sell. Right?
It's your disclaimer, so, and it would be a hard disclaimer, right. Just the same way you bought it without a disclaimer, right. And now you
that's
feel
right.
disgruntled.
So
you don't want your
you know,
people to feel
yeah.
that way.
Yeah, I think they've got a well and
right.
the,
yeah.
the.
But still, you invested in something that's, you know, less
yeah.
than optimal.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that kind of answers your question. But I mean, you know, we wouldn't do anything that would be a problem. You know,
because I mean, and just really just as a neighbor, and I know, I mean, like I said, I know all of you, and
yeah.
really I trust all of you, but I can say, you know, it's a very sensitive issue, that water line and the water making big marshes out there. It's very tough, you know, and it's going to be hard on you guys. You know, if you decide to put 29 homes on there, there will be emotions attached. So that's just me as a neighbor telling
yeah,
you.
I don't think you'd. You know, you talk about the amount of water you yep. can pull out of there on a daily basis and the pressures that you need for,
right.
you know, fire flow, that kind of stuff with, you know, I don't think you get there with the system
right.
no.
as how it exists today,
mm-hmm.
right? So there
right.
need to be, but if there is a change in that infrastructure and the infrastructure is improved, then,
right.
and you could, you know, like, I wouldn't want to take that right away. Right?
I appreciate what you're saying.
So what are we voting on?
So... I have a motion for approval and.
I like that. I like that.
And.
I've marked out a couple things. What condition?
I'll let you do it. I would just vote for approval and that's it. End of sentence.
Come back in 2 years.
Without any conditions.
I mean, I've heard both sides, and I'm like you. It's emotional that it is, and it's. But I understand where they're coming from too. You have an investment, you have property. You guys haven't cut corners yet, so I would have to approve, or I'd have to agree with Bob on this.
Staff's recommending 3 years.
That is through to 21. Through the end of 21.
Oh, sorry, I was looking the wrong thing. I apologize. Never, ignore me. Sorry. Yes, you're right. December 7th, 2021.
It's funny, we got 3 years on the original one and then 2 years on the subsequent one.
Well, I think I'm looking to you as a neighbor, and you know, I'm looking to you as a responsible developer, as I know you to be. And I think that there would be some legality in trying to limit someone's ability to purchase something, and I'm concerned about putting that condition on that maybe isn't enforceable.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really, you know, I'm telling you as a neighbor how neighbors will react and how the feeling is around it, and I want your project to be successful. I believe in your project. I think, you know, I'm a realtor. If I had horse property to sell, it'd be a wonderful thing. Especially what you're saying is there's people who can afford a half acre, but you can't have a horse on a half acre. So it is needed. It's definitely a
lot of people
a
want
niche.
That, right? They want to have the horse. They want the horse to be close enough. You
yeah.
probably
mm-hmm.
close enough, but they
yeah.
don't want it in their backyard.
And
right?
they can't.
Well,
and
some
they,
of us want
yeah,
it in
well,
our backyard.
They maybe can't afford the 5 acres that
right.
they want for a big arena,
yeah.
you know, and a big
well,
barn.
And boarding facilities are closing right and left.
Yes, they are. And boarding facilities are closing right and left. So I believe in your project. I do. And I want people to embrace it. And I'm telling you where you're going to have a pitfall. So
let me hear what you're saying.
You know,
like I understand.
So I'm asking you to please, you know, work mm-hmm. with that factor, because it won't be pretty. It won't
yep.
be pretty. And, you know, again, but on the other hand, I'm a very concrete person, and I don't want to put a condition that can't be enforced legally. So I'm not going to do that. And so I'm going to go with Bob for approval. And
do you want to specify time?
Well, I would give you more time because I want you to get onto the municipal water line.
Three years.
So, 3 years. You know, I want you to have the time to get onto something municipal.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We're not even done with our agenda.
Oh, God, I heard you this time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Okay, now we'll review the 2020 meeting schedule and make any changes if possible or possible action.
So, of course, because you guys meet at the end of the month, and it always hits the holidays.
Bless you.
So, in the red there are the two that we really need to talk about. It's November 25th is the day before Thanksgiving, and then December 30th is the day before New Year's Eve. So in the past, we have not met on those days. And if we cancel them on here, it doesn't mean that if something came along, we couldn't meet another time, you know, if something came up. So my suggestion would be to cancel those two on the calendar and then leave it open if we need to change it. This is also your opportunity to change the time of the meeting if anybody wants to do that.
And I would say yes, that's what we should do, just what we've done before, and if something comes up,
okay, cancel those two. And keep the time the same?
Yeah.
Okay.
All in favor?
Yeah.
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Okay.
Oh, no. Sorry. Moving right along. A representative from the 2020 census will share information about the upcoming census, including employment opportunities.
That's me. Hey, guys.
Good evening. Right. So, on my tiny little screen on my iPad, you guys can like them. Census tracts. So, Red Rock CAC goes all the way from basically there to probably down to Arden too? All the way down into Arden? You guys are down in Arden?
No.
No, Wallapai.
Oh, okay. Wallapai.
Wallapai to Calico Basin down that way. About Calico and Wallapai down that way.
Okay. So yeah, you guys are like two census tracts then. This one, the smaller one, and then this bigger one. The bigger one is also part of Mount Charleston, which I will be seeing tomorrow night.
Yeah.
All right, the census is very important. Every 10 years, we count the people for the House of Representatives. It's very important for our representation in Washington, D.C., but it's also equally important for funding. In your folders, there's various pages. On the left-hand side is all about the census, and the right-hand side is, please come work for us, we need a lot of help. We do. We need a lot of help in all areas. People who work in the census, we work locally. We work local to our area because we know our streets better. My area is big because I'm the only one of me. I am a recruiting assistant. I'm the only one of me that's basically west of the 15 and north of Charleston, well, and including this because of the way the census tracts are, you know, Mount Charleston. And it going all the way down. This, the large census tract down there, goes all the way down to Mountain Springs. So Blue Diamond, Mountain Springs, Lee Canyon, Cow Canyon, half of Cold Creek is all one giant census tract. And you may be wondering, why? Well, because it's based on population. Census tracts are based on population from 1,200 to 8,000 people. Optimal size is around 4,000 people. The one next to you, which is the Vistas, and like the edge of, this is like the Vistas, and the edge of, we're dying.
And I'm dying.
The Vistas, which is like West Summerlin, they are their own census tract. They probably have approximately between 4,000 to 8,000 people in them. In town, where it's more dense, sometimes you can get like a half a square mile, is like a whole census tract. But on your pages on the left-hand side, that's all about the census. The yellow sheet is your best explanation about how we do the census, why we do the census, everything. Your information is secure. Nobody's going to know where you live for at least 80 years. That's when you know, that's when, you know, Ancestry or whoever will get it. Right now, the IRS knows way more about you. And we won't share anybody's information. So we don't share your name and address to any other government agency. It's hidden away for 80 years. You are basically a whatever you identify at your location, a statistic. Okay? This time, technology. We have technology. People will be able to respond to the census, secure internet, over the phone, also secure phone, or by the mail, send in your little card. Some people, of course, have those addresses which have the long forms. It's the address, it's not you. So, it's just random, computer generated, just random. Most people are going to have the little simple questions. I don't know yet, but we will come back and tell you when we have more information about more details about the questions. The third page in there is the green sheet. Everybody is worth money. We're all worth money. It's the Nevada Counting for Dollars. And there's like so many programs that are dependent upon the numbers. Everybody's worth $26,000 at least. And if people don't get counted, and there's hard to reach populations, and the rural communities are hard to reach populations because not a lot of people trust them government people, and you know, and everybody's like, well, why do you have to do this and stuff? And then again, there's also people who don't live there all the time, because, you know, that's their house that they live in when they're in town. So there's various reasons why it's a hard to count population. And outreach. Outreach is a pain. Because, seriously, I haven't been able to go to Mount Charleston since, what, October, because weather. So, you know, outreach is not easy. Imagine what they're doing in Alaska. They're flying around in Alaska to try to reach people, to try to get to them. So, you know, the rural communities, the little communities, it's hard to get to because, you know, they're out there. Yeah, lots of stuff. And then your last page in there is 50 ways census data is used. Everybody's like, what do they need all that data for? Why do they need to know if I am a woman who's over 50, blah, blah, blah? Well, roads, libraries, schools, hospitals, programs, maybe the city or the county or somebody who is building a rec center wants to know, what's the demographic? Should we build a senior center? Should we build one that has more children stuff? Do we need a multi-gen? You know, what do we need to best serve the residents of these areas? They don't know who lives there until who lives there tells them who lives there. Your address is just your address. Most of the people that we're hiring now are for the, what you call the census takers, the follow-up response people. Because even though we can like do the census online, you can call on the phone, you can send in your little card, people are gonna forget, they're not gonna do it, they'll be out of town, they'll be in the hospital, something will happen, they won't do it, or just nobody will live at an address. Because, you know, suppose he gets all them houses built, and, you know, half of them nobody's living in yet, there's still an address, a card will still go to it, nobody will respond because nobody lives there. So you track down, why didn't that address respond? Oh, nobody lived there. Or why didn't that address respond? Oh, well, they were on vacation and they came back and, you know, it was in a pile of mail and they, or, you know, something horrible happened in their family. And, you know, it just wasn't on their, like, to-do list because, you know, their house burned down and they had bigger issues to worry about. Many, many reasons. Not to worry. That's why we have the follow-up response people who are background checked, fingerprinted, vetted, and, you know, good citizens who live locally and work locally. It's like your neighbor. Anybody have questions about the census?
What little bit I've heard or read so far is the actual census occurs in April, is that mm-hmm. correct?
April 1st, 2020.
But they were on the news today, they said they were already counting homeless people in North Las Vegas, so they're beginning, right?
Right. Some of the very hard to count populations, such as the homeless people are like a special effort, because if you've ever driven around town and seen homeless people, there is a lot of guys with dogs living in the wash. They're all different guys, they all have different dogs, they all need to be counted. But you gotta, it's an effort. That's like a very special effort. We have a whole separate team working on homeless people. Because also homeless people are also extremely transient. So, you know, I always use homeless, you know, the homeless guy in the wash because that's who my kids are always like seeing. That, you know, that guy and he had like the dog. And then there's like the other guy and he had like the dog. My kids are always telling me about them. So they're like, they're my archetype of homeless person. But, you know, they need to be counted because they count too. But suppose, you know, homeless Bob with the golden retriever who's living in the wash down on Washington by Cheyenne decides to move his tent down a bit, practically down to Henderson. We need to make sure he's counted where he mostly lives.
I think what you saw on TV was probably the homeless census that they're doing through social services.
Yeah.
They do that once a year, and it's usually the end of January. It's a one point in time.
Thank you. So if someone is interested in working as a census taker, how long would a person have to apply for that, and how?
Apply online.
Okay.
If you have questions, the hardest part of the application is the password. Because it's a government website, it's one of those passwords, you know, capitals, small letters, special characters, and numbers, 12 things long or more. Make a creative sentence. The hardest part is the application. We need people now. We are hiring now. We are getting people fingerprinted on next Wednesday. I'm going to be going to Pahrump to fingerprint a bunch of people for Nye County who will be getting processed in.
Tell them how much it pays. It pays pretty good.
In your folder? Yes. $18 an hour for the average little peon, more for supervisors. Because supervisors have to make lists and do all that supervisory stuff with payroll and whatnot. And you get mileage, because while most everybody works within a 5-mile radius of their house, and yes, you can ride your bike or walk or, you know, ride your horse, most everybody like drives their car. So you get paid mileage. But you don't have to drive your car. You can take public transportation. That's cool. You can ride your horse. 10 years ago, I was a follow-up response person. I rode my bicycle a lot because, you know,
quicker.
It's quicker. It was quicker. It was quicker for parts of my ride. It was like just a little bit quicker. And we do paid training because nowadays, of course, technology will be using devices. It's likely people will be using laptops, so they will be trained on the software of the laptops, which was specially designed, and the care and maintenance of the laptops and all that stuff. And you get paid mileage to go to training. You get paid to go to training. And it's government payroll. They love to have you on direct deposit because then it just automatically goes in. You get paid every week. And it's a fun job. It's cool. And most of all, remember, get counted. And don't be afraid.
It goes for about 3 months, is that correct?
It goes for as long as it's needed to do. The average follow-up response is 6 to 8 weeks, could go to 12 weeks. The end of the project, we need to have everybody counted and all the data in and gathered. It needs to be all done by the end of October of 2020, because that's the end of the fiscal year, right? At the end of October is the end of the fiscal year? You guys are fiscal year, right?
Yeah, ours is July. All fiscal years are different.
All right, for the government, because the project info needs to go to Washington so that they can do it, and then they send it back to the state. So next year, when our state legislature meets up in Carson City, they'll have the information, and they can do all the redistricting magic that they do for, you know, the county commissioners, the state assembly, the state senators, whether or not our congressmen, whether we have 4 or 5, and hopefully we don't lose 4, we want to keep, you know, we want to get more. So all of that gets done up there next year in Carson City, so those guys are going to be very busy redrawing a lot of maps and proposing a lot of stuff. And then they will also know how much we will be getting for our roads and our hospitals and stuff, and so they can start planning. They can start planning on that. And, you know, low count means, it doesn't mean that you didn't get counted so you don't get to, you know, drive on that road or go to the library. It just means that, you know, less funds for those roads. Less funds for the 15 and the 93 and the 95, and don't we want them widened to better roads like we're doing down there? We want that. So, any questions?
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay.
Thank you for your time.
All right.
All right, we're at the end of our meeting. We now have comments by the general public. If there's anything that you'd like to speak about in our jurisdiction, yes, Audrey.
Audrey Dotson, 6 River Road. Someone had mentioned to me that the RV park was approved down on 160 and 159.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right.
Okay, and do they have a well there? Because someone told me they were going to tap into the UP line.
No, they need to have a commercial well, and they needed to purchase water rights in order to prove that they could buy, and one of the conditions was that they needed to prove that there were enough commercial water rights available to support their project. So they didn't procure the water rights, but they found the water rights subject to purchasing them, subject to their approval. So they're not going to be on the UP line. Like I said, for one thing, they are required to do a commercial.
No. So they haven't drilled a well yet then?
I don't believe that they have.
No, because the project's not started yet.
And the land's up for sale
right now.
Do you
know, is it the Blackwell, is the owner of that property? Do you know who the owner is?
I don't remember. You're talking about, what's Blackwell's first name?
I don't know.
Blackwell's not the name.
No.
Someone else was talking that they were going to put an RV, not an RV, but a mobile home park.
No, it's not a mobile home park. In the conditions, there was limits on how long someone could stay, and I think it was something in the vicinity of 2 weeks.
Right, the zoning wouldn't allow that.
Part one of the conditions was that no one could stay there for more than 2 weeks, something like that. One of the other conditions was that they needed to have tenting areas for people for tenting.
For tenting, too.
Right. And okay. So it kind of reduced the impact and the density of the impact. And then there was they had a car wash that got removed. So they made a lot of concessions.
Okay, and I have one other concern. On State Route 159, right before you get to Cactus Joe's, have you noticed on the left hand side they put two poles there, and there's a parcel that's in the wash that's for sale.
Yeah.
So have you noticed that the cactuses have been put over there?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, they put metal poles there. The hot air balloon company landed, so they're taking off from there. And they're putting cactuses on that property.
I do know there is a private piece of property in that wash. Because I've looked at the maps and the inholdings, and there is a private piece of property that's in that wash.
Because they're like... looking at the UP line, and there's a surveyor out there. Because, like, Cactus Joe is selling all the taps he can sell on that line.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just wondering,
what you're asking, is there a use permit?
Yeah.
Is there some kind of use permit?
Nothing's come through.
For the property or anything that's there. Because if they do go to try to use a use permit, like they would ask, or they don't have to ask, as long as Cactus Joe is selling the taps, they can buy a tap into that water line.
Right, but if you're thinking that they're going to be using it for something, I mean, it is the wash, so they'd almost, I don't know how they could build in it, but you're thinking, could they have like some kind of landing place for a permanent landing place?
Oh, they landing there.
That work.
I don't know.
I thought we had certain guidelines.
But there are guidelines for where they can land. I remember reading that. Oh, maybe our liaison could find out about
hot
the
air balloons. Jeff, didn't you look into hot air balloons?
There's an ongoing thing with the FAA and the hot air balloons.
Right, I remember this. We had this conversation.
So the problem with hot air balloons is they don't know where they're going to land.
Right.
So they're in the process. It's called the commercial entities. There are recreational hot air balloons, but the commercial entities are not allowed to be using BLM land to take off or land for their use. So they're all in the permitting process with BLM. And I don't know what the status is. It's been a couple of months. They were still working on some environmental, they were looking at environmental impacts of the areas. And Clark County has told them that they're not allowed to use the retention basins either. So we know there has been some taking off from back there, supposedly on private property over there at Cactus Joe's. We're doing the best we can monitor. There's no criminal statute other than if they land on your land. We could we can't trespass them from them. But if they land there again, obviously that would be a criminal violation.
I took a picture of one last Friday morning when I was coming to post the agendas, because I came around the corner. I'm like, what is that? It was
most
just
of the
a side.
Operations have moved themselves to Peralta because they're,
look like a sunrise.
They're trying not to get in trouble with BLM because they want to get those permits, and they're trying to work out. They're trying to work out moving them towards Jean Dry Lake Bed.
Oh, that's a good spot.
Yeah, where they would not be of impact to people who, residents who own homes. There's no one for them to bother out there.
Right.
So that's, yeah.
Where I saw it, there were no homes around or anything. I mean, but the Red Rock overlay is about design. It has nothing to do with hot air balloons.
They're allowed to use private property.
And land on our property on a roof.
But in a nutshell, they're allowed to use private property to their operations. So they do is take off, so landing, they kind of go where the wind takes them.
They use permits?
So it's a crazy thing. They can land kind of where they want. Not necessarily, yeah. But they can't control where they land. So it's one of those.
Every landing is an emergency.
And they play that card all the time. Oh, well, I was going to land here, but
cool.
Conditions, and I had an emergency, I had to run it down. And that's something that they'll shout to the FAA. Yes, yeah. It's always if you have complaints about specific commercial entities, recreational thing, we can't really do anything with them. The people who are just, who own their own hot air balloons or just go out in them, they can use public land. That's fine. You can't use BLM land for commercial purposes without
right.
Purpose.
Yeah.
So if you have complaints about commercial, specific commercial outfits that maybe you see out there, you can lodge them with the FAA. The hot air balloons are all under their radar right now.
The hot. But if you want to ride in a hot air balloon, Sandy Valley's having Balloon Fest February 15th to support the volunteer fire department.
Well, that sounds like fun.
Yeah. It's a cheap way to take a ride.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Thank you all for your patience. Are there any
it's
more
like $50
comments?
For a ride?
Yes, I would like to see the shooting records of Sergeant Dean at the Sportsman see how the accuracy.
they are great stewards of law enforcement.
That's beautiful. Yes, my dear.
Remember we wrote all the things up for what we wanted in the community?
Yes.
Is that going to be on the agenda next month? Where our money was going to go?
Remember?
We got voted for cutting.
No, that won't be till next year because it gets. I give you an update next year.
Oh, of what we might have got?
We got awarded. Right, I will give you an update of if any of them have been done. And if not, where the process is. Because, like, we came back with one.
There was four on the table, right?
There were several things.
But some were, like, the what? Community center?
Community center was.
I have it right here, but I'm saying we won't know until next year because they were for the fiscal year coming up. So they won't even have been decided yet. I can tell you right now.
Yes, I
can.
Okay.
Hold on.
During the meeting. Okay. I'm going to adjourn the meeting, and you can continue this conversation.
Boom.
I want going, but it might be interesting.
It is. Anybody doesn't want these, I'll take them to Mount Charleston tomorrow.
My number?
702-353. Yeah, I just want to change it up a little bit.
So you are Sandy Valley.
I'm fighting.
My friend,
my lawyer.
Yeah, I know Chris Weeks. Yes, I know, because I was a 4-H leader for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
I was an RTS leader.
Oh, in Sandy Valley?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yep, I know Christine very well.
You know the DAPAs and all that. You know everybody on the
list. Well, they don't care anymore.
Yeah, they was Oregon. Yes, I think. Yeah. I was a 4-H leader in North Las Vegas. And I knew Christine when she was in the Chiefs homeschool group. Way back when she only had like a couple of years.
Yeah.
A long time ago.
Yeah.
And then she moved to Sandy Valley.
Okay, so it was for additional funding for future bike trail.
3-4.
To study the drainage at the baseball field. To remove the docks on Arroyo, which is never going to happen. A community center, which I can tell you is not going to happen. And this one I think is a different possibility. It's a 5 to 12 year old playground area. But I think that is a possibility.
Well, bigger swings.
That's the way, yeah. That's the addition.
They need a community center, though.
They have a community center right over there.
That one. That's the one that they're renovating and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, that's, they have a community center. All of Enterprise does not have a community center, so I guarantee Blue Dragon's not going to get one before 350,000 people get one.
Really efficient.
Yeah, it's, you know,
and they're going to tether it?
No, they fly around the town. It's really cool. It's, I think it's usually $50 a person, which it's a great. It's not a super long time. Right. If it's windy, they won't do it. Last year, they did. But it's a great. It's for the launch of Fire Department, and it's a great way to get experience of riding a hot air balloon without paying $300 a person. And so they go up and go over Sandy Valley, and they land, and then they pick up another person to go around, and it's great. Oh, this is the way to do it then. Do it. I don't know if that has anything to do with how they're
going to do it. I know.
Oh, I know, you told me.
I know.
And it's like, I know, but I don't think we can legally tell someone.
You're like, shit.
You're trying to survive.
You told me not to. Try to give him CPR.
I don't
know. He knows.
You know, I don't mind.